Hello, I'm Kyle Willoughby. Joining me is Claire White.
Hello.
And this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures in Nerd Manual. We're here to discuss new nerd creations, how they were made, and explore the roots of the characters in the stories. And today we actually have a very special guest with us. She's a journalist for Hypebol, and she covers lots of, geeky fandoms, and including our topic today, which is Legion, Karen Rott.
Woo! So happy to have you, Karen.
Yay!
Hi! I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show with us, Karen. We were very excited to really get into Legion and explore some of the themes. So like I said, today's topic is Legion. Legion is an FX show created by Noah Hawley of Fargo fame and is based on a lesser-known X-Men character called Legion. The show follows a maybe schizophrenic David Haller, a.k.a. Legion, played by Dan Stevens, a.k.a. Cousin Matthew. From Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey, yeah.
As he busts out of a psychiatric facility and discovers that he has psychic powers and that there are other people out there like him. Mutants, that is. The show's done in a very trippy and visually interesting way, exploring the mind of a powerful mutant who may suffer from a serious mental illness. The show stars Dan Stevens, as I said before, as the title character. Aubrey Plaza as Lenny, who is a sometimes friend, sometimes hallucination of David Haller of Legion. Rachel Keller plays Sydney Sydney Barrett.
Sid Barrett.
For anyone who knows Pink Floyd, that should ring a bell. A fellow mutant and love interest of Legion. And Jean Smart plays Melanie Bird, a therapist and leader of like kind of a ragtag mutant team.
That's a good summary.
Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Beth. We're always working on our summaries.
We are.
I think you did a great job.
Thank you, Karen. But hats for Patrick. Claire will be talking about the creation of the show Legion, and I will be going into mental illness and the background of the character Legion from the comics and in the show. And that's a funny thing about this show, and actually you mentioned this in one of your articles, Karen, that there's not, like, the other characters in the show aren't really from Marvel Comics. There's really only two characters in the show who are actually from Marvel Comics. Everyone else is kind of a new character.
Yeah.
So yeah, they kind of took this character and then built their own world around it, which I actually think is a really interesting concept, and so far they're doing pretty good with it.
Yeah, I do like that idea, and like the creativeness of the side characters and like their abilities. Like Sydney's, when you first find out Sydney's ability, it's pretty cool. It's an exciting moment in the show. So yes, let's get started. I will launch into a brief history of the character Legion. Alright, so first I want to give a little background on the character Legion, also known as David Haller. David Haller is a mutant who made his first comic book appearance in 1985 in the New Mutants series. He was created by the prominent X-Men writer Chris Claremont, who wrote X-Men forever. He wrote X-Men from 1975 to 1991.
I feel like we've mentioned Chris Claremont multiple times on this podcast.
Well, he was the writer of Giant Size X-Men, which was the big reboot of X-Men where, you know, Colossus showed up and Nightcrawler, and it's like kind of gathering all the new mutants together. And he's just a big name in comics in general, but specifically to the X-Men. So Chris Claremont was the writer of Legion, and Bill Sienkiewicz was the artist. Now, David Haller's comics backstory is that he is the son of Professor X and Gabriella Haller. Gabriella Haller is a Holocaust survivor. So Xavier and Haller have kind of a steamy affair, and David Haller is born, though David is kept secret from Professor X for many years.
Why?
I don't know. I think Gabriella just... I'm not sure, actually. I wish I knew. That would be good information. Karen, do you know why?
I do not. I can take a guess. I would assume maybe it has something to do with Professor X and everything that he's involved in and just wanting to protect a child because, you know, that's a soft spot. So his enemies would go after a kid if they knew he had one.
Yeah, that sounds very solid and very likely.
It sounds good to me.
So when David is just a kid, even though there's no Professor X around to, you know, draw trouble to him, he's still has trouble drawn to him. He's the lone survivor of a terrorist attack, and the severe trauma of the incident causes David's mutant powers to manifest, and he incinerates the minds of most of the terrorists who attack. though their leader's mind is absorbed into his own, and the trauma of the attack also causes David's mind to split into numerous personalities, each personality controlling an aspect of his power. So that terrorist leader, too, is one of his personalities now. Wow. He was kind of absorbed into...
Feels very timely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's... Well, yeah, terrorism in Israel has been... It's an old song. Now, both David's personalities and mutant powers seem pretty limitless. Like, I saw a list that implied that he had over 1,000 different personalities living inside him. And he is classified as an Omega-level mutant, which is the most powerful, I guess, quote-unquote, level of mutant. I also tried to find a good definition as to, like, what is Omega-level. Like, because I'd heard someone say that it's mutants that are a threat to all of humanity. But apparently that's not necessarily true.
Who else is Omega level? Do you guys
Magneto
know?
Magneto is Omega level. Professor X is Omega level. Apocalypse is Omega level.
Those are the big ones?
Those are the big ones I can remember. I mean, there's more. And then, obviously, David Holler.
Is Scarlet Witch?
Scarlet Witch seems like she would be Omega level.
And she used
level.
To be a mutant.
Yeah, and she... That's right. Karen, I don't know if you knew about this, but... Marvel is like, Disney's Marvel is rolling back some of their characters as to whether or not they were mutants so they could retain the screen rights to them.
And Scarlet Witch was one of those.
Yeah, there's a lot going around in the fact that they used, what's his name?
Quicksilver?
Yes, Quicksilver in both movies, and the things they could and couldn't say during... The movies, like Marvel can't say the word mutant and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's so interesting.
It's pretty funny. It's pretty silly.
I'll actually get more into it later.
Oh, really?
Yeah, cool. I have a whole segment on
because
it.
Because we did an episode on Squirrel Girl, and in the comics in Squirrel Girl, they roll that back too.
Oh, yeah. Her parents definitely are like, not a mutant.
Your parents are like, oh, yeah, you're definitely not a mutant. You're something else. They don't say what it is. It's pretty awesome. Anyway, back to David Holler / Legion. Some of these abilities that he has are, and I just want to list the big ones, but he's got a bunch. Telepathy, so he can read minds. Telekinesis, so he can move stuff with his mind. Pyrokinesis, which means he can catch stuff on fire with his mind. Time travel, which is pretty self-explanatory. And reality warping, which means he's able to manipulate the very plane of perception that all us humans live on. So he's pretty much a god.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. And this is comics David Holler. This David Holler / Legion is different from the Legion that we see on the show.
They have different powers. In the show, it's not quite the same.
In the show, at least right now, he doesn't seem as powerful. And maybe we're going to get to a point where he is. But in the comics, it's a little ridiculous. And when I was reading about him, it almost seemed like Superman to DC, where it's just like, oh, nothing, nothing can touch him. Now, his X name, Legion, apparently comes from a New Testament story, which is funny because wouldn't David Holler be Jewish since his mom was a Holocaust survivor? I just thought that was...
What is Professor X? Does he follow a religion?
He's a mutantologist.
I guess he was raised by his mom.
Yeah, David Holler is raised by his mom, and who's a Holocaust survivor, so you'd think he's Jewish, but his name is from the New Testament, apparently. And it's a story in the New Testament where Jesus performs an exorcism on a man who has a bunch of demons inside him. So Jesus goes up and asks the demons what their names are, because that's something you have to do in an exorcism, apparently, is find out the names of the demons. And the demons say, we are called Legion, because there's a bunch. And so Legion's got all these multiple
personalities.
All these personalities living inside him. That's where the name allegedly comes from.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty cool. I mean, yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I do like it. It's neat. Now, in researching Legion, the comic character, I found lots of confusion as to what sort of mental illness he has. A lot of articles say that this fictional character suffers from schizophrenia, while others refer to Legion as having dissociative identity disorder, which is also known as multiple personality disorder. So I'm going to give the kind of back of the cereal box definition of some of these mental illnesses, because they are very different, and the character Legion in the comics, to me, clearly has one of these, not both of these. So I'm going to start with schizophrenia. Now, schizophrenia symptoms and criteria for diagnosis are two or more of the following symptoms. Each have to be present for a significant portion of time, like 1 to 6 months. Delusions, which is kind of like a delusion of grandeur. So maybe you think that you're the Messiah, or paranoid delusions are common too in schizophrenia. You think the government's watching you or the aliens are out to get you. Jealous delusions are common too in schizophrenia, where you're just, if you have a spouse or something, you have these delusions that they're out cheating on you with no basis of evidence. Hallucinations are a common symptom in schizophrenia, and they can be auditory or visual. And they're more commonly auditory. It's more commonly like hearing voices. There's less visual hallucinations in schizophrenia. Disorganized speech is a symptom of schizophrenia. Incoherence and derailment, like losing your train of thought and not being able to understand where someone's going with thoughts.
I feel like that's just how I talk.
But like, you know, to a much larger degree. And those are just like I said, back of the cereal box symptoms of schizophrenia. Now, for dissociative identity disorder, which is it's also known as multiple personality disorder. So for multiple personality disorder, dissociative identity disorder, you need a bunch of things need to happen. And it's actually much more rare than schizophrenia. You need to have two or more distinct personality states present, each with its own relatively enduring pattern or perception. So you essentially need to have two like really concrete personalities inside you that persist, that are there for a while. And another big part of dissociative identity disorder is you must have amnesia of important and everyday events. The idea that like when one personality is controlling your body, you don't remember things going on. And in the old DSMs, it used to be that you just have amnesia from important events. But in the DSM-5, the newest one, they mentioned that it has to be important.
What's
and
DSM?
Small events. DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's the holy bible of psychotherapy. Which is what someone who works in the field, that's how they put it to me. But it's how you, it's helps you diagnose people with mental illness, essentially. So like I said, amnesia, and that has to be a part of dissociative identity disorder. And there are a bunch of other criteria for it, but an important one that I thought was important to mention is you cannot have amnesia or different personalities due to direct effects of a substance. So if you black out drinking and you don't remember what you did and you acted like a different person, that doesn't mean that you have multiple personalities.
But could you have multiple personalities because you've done so many drugs that eventually now you have, like, it's messed with your mind so much?
Well, psychotic drugs, psychedelic drugs and drug use, substance abuse in general will oftentimes exaggerate symptoms of mental illness, like such as schizophrenia. And I've read that there is some evidence that you can get like a drug-induced schizophrenia, but that's not the only kind of schizophrenia
right.
You can get. So like I said before, dissociative identity disorder, the multiple personality disorder, is extremely rare, and it affects about 0.01% of the U.S. population. They think it's hard to tell. Schizophrenia is much, much more common, and it affects about 1% of the adult population in the U.S.
Oh, that's a higher number than I would have even thought.
Yeah, and it affects men and women equally, which is also interesting. So that's because it affects men and women equally, they think that it's largely genetic then, is one of the reasons.
You know what it sounds like when you're listing those symptoms? A cult leader was the first thing I thought of. Like
of dissociative identity or schizophrenia?
Schizophrenia. Like hallucinations.
Hearing voices.
Yeah.
Delusions of grandeur.
That's when you start a cult.
Yeah. I bet you Charles Manson may have had schizophrenia or may have schizophrenia. So I think it's interesting when you look at these two mental illnesses and you kind of apply them to Legion the show, the FX show, and Legion the comic character. Because it just, to me personally, it seems that Cousin Matthew, Cousin Matt, the show Legion is...
David Holler
is, well, they're both, they're all David Holler.
Cousin Matthew and David. But, Cousin Matthew's from Downton Abbey, if you missed that earlier.
Yeah. But the FX show Legion character, David Holler, is...
Oh, I see what you're
seems
doing.
More, like, he's closer to schizophrenia, in my own opinion, whereas the comic version of Legion is definitely on the dissociative identity disorder side of the fence with all those personalities and stuff in him. Though he is oftentimes said that he's, people often say he's schizophrenic because a lot of people think that schizophrenia means you have multiple personalities, but it doesn't. And it is a lot more common than people realize. So, like, chances are, the three of us, we probably know someone who's schizophrenic. Maybe we don't know it, or maybe they treat their illness and they live a normal life. And there's been a lot of very famous, successful schizophrenics. One of Philip K. Dick was schizophrenic, and he's like my favorite sci-fi author. John Nash is another one. He was a famous mathematician, popularized by the Russell Crowe movie A Beautiful Mind, and Sid Barrett.
Don't they say that like genius and mental illness on the spectrum can be very close to each other and a lot of times overlap?
They often do, but that is a common misconception that like all schizophrenics are geniuses or something, right.
That's
a common thread. But I wanted to kind of open up a discussion with you guys about what you thought of the kind of depictions of schizophrenia in the show. And if you guys think, without getting into too many spoilers, if David Haller does have schizophrenia, or if he's, if it's just his powers.
Well, I can't attest to the validity of the portrayal of schizophrenia in the show because I don't know much about it, and I wouldn't even pretend to know that much about it. But one of the most interesting things to me was they very specifically brought up the question of, everybody is trying to say that I'm sane, I just have these powers which made me think I was crazy all my life, but what if I actually am insane and have these powers? And I liked that they didn't discount that, because a lot of times you see in media that magic and superpowers are an excuse for being seen as having a mental illness. And that can be kind of problematic, especially for people in the real world who actually have mental illnesses. But in this case, I really enjoyed the fact that he has these superpowers, but also maybe he actually is crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I really like that about the show, and that he's constantly, like Melanie Bird, the kind of leader of the mutants, the ragtag mutant team, is like, no, you're not crazy, you're not. And he's like, no, I'm pretty sure I am. And it's still... Even having watched all the episodes, you're still not sure. Like, I'm not sure if he's actually schizophrenic or not. But it is cool that, like you said, that they put that out there. That, like, because there's that stigma where, you know, like, oh, you're not crazy, you're special. And those voices you're hearing, you're actually reading minds. And, like, that...
That's how you start a cult.
Yeah, that can be problematic. You know, that can be hard for people who actually suffer with this mental illness. What do you think, Claire?
And can you... Oh, go ahead, Karen.
And the fact that he does have a mental illness just further complicates the story, because he's this super, super powerful mutant, but if he can't necessarily understand, you know, his reality, our reality, or if he does have multiple personalities that he can't control, like, that's very scary. I mean, he's scary on his own, having this massive power source that he pulls from, but if he can't gain control of everything, or if one of his personalities is a bad guy, what do you even do with that?
Yeah, or if he has a break with reality and is like seeing something that, or experiencing like a reality that isn't actually there and reacting to it with those powers.
It's like you want the person who has his finger on the nukes to be completely sane.
Yeah, exactly. And he is
a
nuke.
Please.
yes, please.
Can you develop schizophrenia?
Yes, you can. So schizophrenia is genetic, but you can also, it's sort of genetic, but you can also get it from, heavy drug use and substance abuse. And you can have a gene for schizophrenia and never develop it. Like not, and never like break, have that like psychotic break from reality that causes you to manifest the symptoms of schizophrenia.
Because what I got from this is, whether he is or not crazy, is that he might have whether or not he is schizophrenic, he might be now, because it's just been developed by him being unable to control his powers for so long.
Yeah.
And it's almost a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Is when you were talking about all this and whether or not he has it, what I kind of took away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, like you, I don't know if he is or not, or he like, Yeah, maybe whether, a little bit.
Yeah, or if it's if or his powers exaggerate his symptoms right. in a way that like a substance would.
But I also felt from the show that he didn't have to be.
Yeah.
Maybe if he had been in a more, it hadn't been as crazy, or if someone had taken him in who understood his problems earlier, this maybe wouldn't have been as big a problem.
Yeah, yeah. We could talk about this all day, but I think we should move on to Claire's side on production of the show, which I'm really curious about as to like how Fox and Marvel teamed up for this.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the credit list, I don't know if you guys watched the credits on this, but the executive producer/producer list of names goes on forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like Bryan Singer, Jeff Loeb, but you know, like
John Landgraf, big names. I'm going to get to that in a second. So I'm going to start off with the creator, not to spoil it, but when you heard about FX doing Legion, what was one of the things that was always billed along with it?
Guy, creator Fargo, right?
Yeah.
Noah Hawley. Creator of Fargo.
this huge, like, oh yeah, the guy who was doing Fargo is doing a superhero show. I want to talk about him, and I'm going to do a little bit of his backstory. And as a disclaimer, for the sake of time, I'm condensing all of this. The story took place over decades. Hopefully going to get it down to like a minute 30. So he started out trying to be a rock star in his 20s, like you do, but realized he wanted to tell bigger stories than just a song could do, so started writing fiction on the side. He eventually sold a book, made enough from his first book deal that he was able to quit his job and move to San Francisco and join a writer's collective, which I think he looks back on fondly because it sounds lovely. It might not be, like, in reality as nice.
Yeah.
He then wrote a movie spec, which is a non-solicited screenplay. We've talked about specs before. And ended up being featured. It became a feature, excuse me, that was Lies and Alibis, starring Steve Coogan. Have you guys seen it?
Lies and Alibis? No.
No.
I just watched the trailer. It looks quirky and fun. He like helps people to have affairs. Interesting.
Nope. It's like the opposite of Hitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So studio started taking interest in Hawley, and he sold some more pitches, but he never stopped writing books. He got some TV pilots sold. He got a staff job on Bones. Then he sold two TV pilots, The Unusuals and My Generation. Both didn't do very well. I didn't see them. I don't know if you guys did.
I never saw them.
They're both kind of, and these failures of TV shows that he did was gotcha. When I was reading it, how they were sold to me. And then he was approached by FX for Fargo. The first season of Fargo, which I haven't seen, but now I really want to see it, got 18 Emmy nominations, and the second was generally hailed as better than the first and won 5 Emmy Awards. Karen, have you seen Fargo?
I have not, but I've heard a lot of really fantastic things about it.
Yeah, same here.
Me too.
It's got Bilbo Baggins is in it. What's his name? Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman. And Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
Who I just saw an interview with a vampire.
You just saw an interview
just
with a vampire?
Saw it. It's weird.
It's weird.
Well, you're one step ahead of me.
I wouldn't rush to it. So anyway, this made him super in super high demand in Hollywood. He's developing another series for FX based on Kurt Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle, which Kyle is super psyched for.
That's my favorite Vonnegut book.
He's adapting his own novel, Before the Fall, which, by the way, was published in May 2016 to rave reviews. He's developing it into a movie screenplay. And he's developing his feature film debut for Joe Greenberg's Man Alive. He's also writing more books.
And he's doing another season of Legion.
He's doing another season of Legion. He's working on Fargo still. This is on top of his existing projects. He says he still has that freelancer's mentality. I'm a freelancer, so yeah, I understand.
I understand, man.
Yeah. He says it's hard to say no to projects, but he might not be able to do all of it.
Yeah.
So we're gonna come back to Hawley, but we're gonna move on to Lauren Shuler Donner, who is a producer on the show, and she has been a producer on all the X-Men movies. Before the X-Men, she was known as a producer for Mr. Mom, Pretty in Pink, St. Elmo's Fire, Free Willy, and You've Got Mail, to name a few.
Those are some classics.
Yeah, some good 80s rom-coms and 90s.
Yeah, this seems like there's a big gap between those movies, though, and...
And X-Men?
Oh, I guess not. Yeah, first X-Men was 2000.
2000, yeah. She did, I think she did a bunch of the Free Willies, so she was busy in the 90s. So she's been working on the X-Men series since the first one, like I said. Some fun facts about her. Guess who her first intern was? Kyle's looking at my notes.
I didn't see what it was. Who her first intern was?
Yeah.
Like, back in the 80s when she's doing St. Elmo's Fire?
No, I think this is probably on X-Men. Actually, didn't know. I don't know. It's a he. I don't know when he was her intern. Kevin Feige?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh.
She gave him his first job, apparently.
Oh, and he has gone far.
Yes.
He is the head of Marvel Studios. She prides herself on taking an active role in her casting decisions for the franchise. Some of her ideas were Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen because they couldn't get big names for the X-Men, so they went classical. She also apparently really pushed for Hugh Jackman. And then she also pushed for Jennifer Lawrence, Michael Fassbender, and James McAvoy before they were super big.
Yeah, and the X-Men movies have nailed casting, I feel like, pretty well from the get-go, even if some of their movies haven't. They haven't nailed the rest. But their casting always seems pretty solid.
Yeah. Well, they have so many characters. At least you would think they would get some of them really right.
Yeah. Yeah.
By 2015, she said she was worried that the X-Men movies were just repeating themselves. And it was actually her idea to test something new on Prestige Cable. She wanted to do something whimsical, imaginative, and unexpected. And she wanted Noah Hawley. She didn't ask anyone else to do it but him, and she told him he could take any character he wanted and run with it. And apparently, this is the direction she wants to take the X-Men franchise. She wants to give each mutant their own particular genre to play with. So, like, Western style for Logan, foul-mouthed comedy for Deadpool, street-level heist for that Gambit movie that Channing Tatum is going to star in one day.
Is that really going to happen?
She says it's definitely going to happen.
Eventually.
It's not in production, but.
I like him.
No, I like him too.
I feel like I shouldn't, but I just like him. He's really funny.
And he's good looking.
And he's hot.
Yeah.
And he's from Baltimore, actually.
Kyle's from Maryland.
And that's where I'm from.
And she's now free of the original cast and their contracts. And even the old original cast, like the Jennifer Lawrence, Michael Fassbender, all of them. So she feels like she has the freedom to kind of explore whatever she wants now.
Yeah. And wasn't that a thing that Jennifer Lawrence was like, didn't want to do the X-Men movies anymore too?
I read that she kind of said, oh, I'm not coming back unless Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy comes back.
Okay.
I feel like that was Jim just also them flexing their muscles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I'm going to talk about what we've all been waiting to talk about, and that is the Marvel and the Fox relationship.
Yeah. Is it rocky? Is it good?
We're going to find out. God, I don't want to give spoilers. So I'm going to go back to the beginning. We talk about this in our X-Men podcast, but I'm going to recap some. In 2001, Marvel released a TV series called Mutant X. Fox took them to court because they felt they were infringing on the X-Men property. They eventually settled out of court. Since then, only Fox can use the word mutants. Like we were saying earlier, it's interesting to see Marvel work around mutants.
Yeah, where in the comics, they're like, oh yeah, you're not a mutant, you're not anymore.
Inhuman.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I haven't seen any concrete answers to this. I saw a few articles like alluding. And Karen, I wonder if you've heard anything since this is the kind of material that you cover. But from what I can gather, Fox needs Marvel's permission to make any kind of TV show regarding the X-Men. And I think it stems from that court case.
From that attempt, yeah.
Have you heard anything about that?
I don't know the specifics of the contracts, unfortunately, but I do know that obviously it was all movies, so it would make sense that the TV shows are kind of a different animal altogether.
Right. That's what I was kind of getting the gist of, which is why when Fox announced they were making TV shows, they also announced that Marvel would be working with them on them. When they announced Legion, they also announced another TV show called Hellfire, but that got canceled. I've also read a lot of speculation of whether this means Fox characters will cross into the Marvel world or vice versa. Do you guys think so?
No, I don't.
Karen?
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Marvel's doing really good on its own, and I think that Fox is benefiting from Marvel lending a hand. I don't think Marvel needs Fox help at all.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That, like, if Fox characters do appear in a Marvel show, it's Marvel giving Fox, like, a hand. And I don't think that they want to give much of a hand.
They don't. Yeah, like Karen said, they don't need to. Everything that I read said probably not. Also, they will almost definitely not cross into the movies, because I actually didn't know this. Marvel Entertainment, who is in charge of TV, is separate from Marvel Studios, who make the movies. Apparently, there might be some sort of contentious relationship there. I didn't read that far into it, really? Because this is a Fox show, not a Marvel show. Yeah. Even though it kind of is a Marvel show. And Fox TV is also separate from Fox Movie Studios. So the only way the characters probably would cross over is in the TV world. But like you guys said, probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
So on the actual show itself... And working with Marvel, Holly said he never had any problems with the notes Marvel gave, and they kind of accepted that the show was a fully realized standalone project. He said Marvel maintained an active involvement in the show, and this is a quote from a Hollywood Reporter interview that he did, to protect the underlying IP and make sure that the characters people know and love are the characters people know and love, and you're not just borrowing a name and creating a different person that fans can't relate to. So... they're checking in on their IP, but beyond that, as long as you're staying true to the character, you're fine.
They don't care.
John Landgraf, who is fascinating, who is the head of FX, said Marvel embraced that they weren't responsible for the show, so that it didn't have to fit into their big picture. And apparently when Marvel and FX gave notes, they gave them together. They made sure they were partners, not rivals, and that there was never any big disagreement. They all seemed to be able to talk and work things out. I thought that was really nice.
Like adults.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's the smartest thing that Fox can do, working with Marvel. Just like Sony right now with Spider-Man. I mean, look at what Marvel was able to do with Tom Holland's Spider-Man, because they were actually able to work together. So I think anybody would be crazy to be like, no, we're not going to listen to Marvel, who makes... billions of dollars with their franchise right now.
Exactly. Yeah, it's almost like needlessly, you know, poking or pissing off the bear.
Yeah.
Especially when they have control over the comics your characters are in.
Yeah.
And the merch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the first conversations that Holly had about Legion was as Fargo was finishing up its first season, and apparently Daredevil hadn't even released. They had to know Daredevil was coming. I think it released really soon after.
Yeah, yeah.
The pilot was announced in 2014, so they've been working on this for a while. And like I said earlier, Fox came to him and let him pick whatever character he wanted. And he wanted to do something with the superhero genre that hadn't been done before. He wanted to tell a surreal story, which he doesn't think has been told on TV before. And I actually spent some time thinking about this. I can't think of a TV show... besides this one, that I would classify as surreal.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking... Karen, I don't know if you watched the OA at all, but they're very different, but they had some similarities, at least in the unreliable narrator sort of thing.
I watched the first two episodes of that and haven't gone back to it yet, but off the top of my head, I can't think of anything quite like Legion, but I'd have to imagine somebody else has done something surreal like this.
Yeah, it does have like a, I don't know if you guys ever saw The Wall, old Pink Floyd movie, The Wall. you can see like some similarities there, like he's, you know, influenced by that. And I think he says like he's influenced by the...
Right. Oh, I know I've seen surreal movies before, which is what I kept on, I can't even think of a movie, but I know I've seen that before and that's what I kept on thinking of.
Yeah.
But as far as like long form... TV show. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
And he said after working on Fargo, which is an objective story, he wanted to explore a subjective story where the audience would be just as confused as David.
And congratulations.
Yeah, you did it, man.
he He felt that the subjectivity of the show gave him the opportunity to create his own reality. He was drawn to 60s British movies. You can definitely see that influence in the show, that 60s feel. And they drive British cars, but on the right side of the road.
Yeah, I peeked at your notes, and I see you've got Quadrophenia highlighted by The Who. Yeah, that's... I didn't think about that, but yeah.
I haven't seen that movie. Have you?
I've seen parts of it. My uncle loves The Who and loves Quadrophenia. Mm. And actually, my dad brought my uncle to see that in theaters.
Like you said earlier, this is an origin story just for David Holler. None of the other characters... for the most part, are from the comics. And apparently even the actors didn't know where Holly was going with this TV show. And they signed on because of his name and the charisma and his previous work. And I actually read one of Karen's articles where the crew had the freedom to improvise too, and that they didn't have to like do tie-ins as well to like the bigger universe.
Karen, your interview with was it set designer for it?
Yeah.
For Legion.
Yeah, because he said he had worked on Agent Carter season one, and so they're always looking, Marvel's always looking to bring in like little threads to remind you that this is part of a bigger universe.
Yeah.
And on Legion, nothing, none. They were not allowed to put any of that stuff in, which is interesting and I think a little disappointing because especially right now we're so used to looking for all those Easter eggs, which is a really fun thing to do. But at the same time, it kind of allows Noah Hawley to do whatever he wants, which is really fun, too.
Yeah, I think overall, because it is fun looking, getting those Easter eggs, but I feel like overall for the show, it helps it.
Right.
For
and also,
what he's trying for.
Also, continuity wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
Like, you could have a different thing on the set the next day, and it didn't matter, because who knows if this is real anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I have a tinfoil hat theory about it I want to mention at the end.
I wish I had time to talk about FX as a network because they are killing it right now. I was just telling Kyle, like, if you think of all the shows that are on there, American Horror Story, The People, V.O.J. Simpson, The Americans, Louie, Atlanta, Baskets, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Archer, Feud, like they
Oh my gosh, I forgot Archer and It's Always Sunny too.
Yeah, they have so many good shows right now and their method of how they deal with their showrunners and John Landgraf is so interesting, but another podcast where Marvel and Fox aren't involved. As far as ratings go, Legion has gotten decent ratings, but it was actually the least watched drama premiere for FX since Bastard Executioner.
Which I have never even heard of.
No, and it got canceled, and FX hates canceling their shows.
Really?
It did. The ratings did improve, and there was a lot of buzz because it's one of the best rated, if not the best, comic book show ever. It has a critic score on Rotten Tomatoes of 90% and an audience score of 83%.
I guess it's just who you hang out with, because I feel like a bunch of people around me were always talking about Legion.
And, yeah, well,
and so it felt like it was more in the...
We run with a nerdy crowd.
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess that kind of opens it up to our discussion. And Karen, let's start with you. What do you think of Legion?
You know, I was a little reluctant at first because it was so weird. It really was. I was like, I get that this is a highly conceptual show. You want it to kind of mess with your brain. I think they did a really good job of showing David as an unreliable narrator, which kind of makes you question literally everything about the show. And I was like, but it's got to go somewhere. It's still got to be understandable enough that the narrative is clear and you can kind of pick out what may be the truth, what may not be the truth. I think it took me until about the fourth episode. I believe the fourth episode really hooked me for some reason or another. I can't even remember why now. But at that point, I was like, okay, I get this. We kind of know he's unreliable. The story straightened itself out a little bit, and we were able to kind of see, here are the good guys, here are the bad guys. This is our objective for the show. How are we going to reach the end, and what exactly is going on with David?
Yeah.
Once we got to that point, I was like, I can really get on board with this show. It is weird. It is a little confusing, but one of the most exciting things for me is picking it apart and trying to figure out what exactly they're telling us and what's the truth. And once you get to the end, you really enjoy all of these characters, and especially like Aubrey Plaza. I mean, how can you not absolutely fall in love with everything she's done on the show? And by that point, I was like, all right, season two, bring it on.
Yeah, I was lukewarm with Aubrey Plaza in the very beginning, but by the middle of the show, I was like, oh, Aubrey Plaza, you are crushing this right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's one of, I think for me, like, as far as characters in the show go, there's only three, like, and that I care about really, or that I enjoy, like, really, really enjoy watching, and it's Aubrey Plaza's character, it's the main character, it's
Matthew,
cousin Matthew. slash David Holler, and it's Jermaine Clement. So I don't think that's much of a spoiler, but if you're a Flight of the Conchords fan, Jermaine Clement's got like a mid-sized role in this.
He was my favorite part of the show.
Amazing.
See, I started off really liking the show. The first episode completely got me. I was so excited by it. And I love, there's some action in it too, and I loved that they mixed the surreal with the action.
Yeah.
And then it just kept on losing me. And it would always do this thing where I would just not be very interested in the show until the last 5-10 minutes. And then I was really interested. Yeah, like, I have to keep on going. So it's a good way to keep the audience involved. But I always just thought that, and maybe because it's surreal and I'm not, my focus isn't.
You're not into the dark side of the moon.
I know. I just don't have the focus to stay with it. But it just felt like I wasn't able to latch on to something in a way that I was interested the whole time. And there are some episodes where I was very invested the entire time.
Yeah.
The seventh we were talking about, I really liked. But yeah, I don't know. I was very frustrated with it because I would go from really excited to kind of bored.
Well, that's what, and Karen kind of mentioned this, that like they don't give you enough carrots quickly enough. Like you're too confused for too long. So like you have to kind of stick with it. And then they start giving you a couple, and not all the answers, but enough answers that you have footing to be like, okay, this is where it's going. And this person seems like they're going to be a bad guy. And this person seems like they're going to be a good guy. Whereas prior to that, it was all pretty baffling.
Mm.
I do like that the characters are all original ideas of Holly, except for two, and the two that come from comics, which is Legion and then another we won't mention.
Yeah. Do you think that this will help prestige superhero shows? Like, do you think they'll start doing more with them?
Like more artsy superhero shows? I don't know. What do you think, Karen?
I do, if only because the market's getting flooded right now with your typical superhero stuff. I mean, even look at Logan. Logan is very different for this universe as well. And that just, I mean, it went crazy. It blew up. I love that movie so much. And it's because it felt very different from all of the other movies, especially the other X-Men movies that we've been seeing right now. So I think if you think back to even some of the more successful movies, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, they all feel a little bit different than your typical Avengers movies, your typical X-Men movies. So I think this is just proof that people still love this genre, but they need to start seeing something different out of it.
Yeah, a little more variety. My whole thing is, and I agree with you, the Logan was phenomenal, but I wonder, you know, Disney Marvel makes so much money on their shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I'm sure is a fine show. I couldn't get into it, but it's definitely not like, as Claire put it, highbrow as Legion is. And hearing that Legion was one of their lowest, what was it, premiered, like views for the premiere, that makes me a little like wonder, like, yeah.
Well, it's renewed. It got renewed.
It got renewed. It did get renewed.
And I think it'll stay on for a bit. I think Noah Hawley's name, especially, has a lot of pull.
I just wonder if I don't mean this offensively, but the more, like, bubblegum shows just make more money so that those are going to be the ones that we will still see a lot more of.
I think they have a broader appeal.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that is true. I do think that the bubblegum ones, as you said, do have a broader appeal, but I don't think they should discount the people who are diehard fans who do want to see We actually, I wrote an article with one of my friends about Logan and why it was successful and the fact that it's kind of a kitchen sink drama in that, yes, it's got action, but it's so much about the character development. And longtime fans really want to see that. You know, I love action movies. That is by far my preferred genre of movie. I love the explosions and the fight sequences and all of that, and I could watch them all day long, but I think you still want character development, and that's why Logan was so successful, and I think that's why Legion caught a lot of people's attention, because it still has a lot of those elements of the superhero genre, but at the same time, you're really exploring the psyche of this character.
Yeah, that's true. And I wonder, like, comic book movie show fans are getting older. Like, we're all, you know, mid-20s, 30s, early 30s, and it's like, maybe we as consumers of these, of this genre, as adults, are looking more for, like, yeah, these, something a little different, like Legion or like Logan.
Well, I know that FX was trying to lure non-superhero fans to the genre.
It worked on my girlfriend. She liked it, and she is not a superhero fan.
I thought you were going to say she's not a superhero.
She like, is a superhero.
I know she's a superhero. She's,
confession to make, and I can't remember if I said this before, but pretty much everything I said in my segment I got from my girlfriend, who works in an inpatient psychiatric ward. So thank you, Nikki, for helping me with my research for this. But yeah, I wanted to ask Karen if you had any favorite moments from Legion.
Oh boy, I mean, I hate to keep saying this, but Aubrey Plaza, like, yeah, she's so
all of her
good
moments.
And the cool thing about Legion too, and I think this could take you out of it sometimes, but also kind of got me more interested, is they have concept episodes sometimes. So they kind of have these bottleneck episodes where the plot doesn't necessarily go anywhere, but it's this exploration of either like kind of an alternate reality, or it's an exploration of David's mind and how that all works. And that is fascinating to me. And I think it's so cool to see how Aubrey Plaza's character evolved throughout the show. But other than that, I would say just David in general, I found very interesting. And I liked the moments where he was different. Again, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but when he wasn't quite himself, the way that Dan Stevens can turn on this very cold, calculating kind of look, and even the cadence of his voice changed. And I was like, this is why he was cast in the show.
Yeah.
He is so good at doing this, at like turning David on and off. And that really did hook me to that character in particular.
I really liked Dan Stevens. I thought he was super good in this show. And yeah, it wouldn't have worked if he wasn't good.
Yeah, no, it was a lot on his shoulders, especially from the beginning. Like in the beginning of the like first couple episodes, I feel like it's a lot of him and Aubrey Plaza. And if even one of them isn't bringing their A game, it falls flat. They crushed it. My favorite part is the seventh. I think the seventh episode of this show is masterful. I think first episode is really good, but the seventh episode, which is the second to last episode, to me was the climax of the show. And there's this part where it's like this crazy silent movie-esque montage, and
yes,
they're playing the song that they're playing in the background to the whole thing is Bolero by Ravel. Which is like this, it's this classical piece that it kind of repeats the same two melodies over and over again, but it builds an intensity as it repeats. And I think it just, all that fit together so well. And that episode was so good that when I turned on the finale, I was like, what the hell is this? This is nowhere near as good as what I just watched and was a little... And I thought the finale was a little disappointing. Like, the seventh episode shone so brightly that the eighth one, the last episode, just, to me, was kind of dull. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a hard act to follow. Like, it peaked too soon.
Yeah. And I want to ask, and this isn't, this is no spoilers, but what do you guys think of the Pokeball?
I hadn't even thought of that. Actually, that is so funny.
What any
I
was not into the Pokeball.
Not into it at all.
It was weird. I mean, I'm interested to see what it means and what that means for season two, but it was sort of weird and random.
I thought they had it. I thought they had it at a good place.
And then.
What? If you watch till the eighth episode,
you'll know what we're talking about.
We'd love to hear what you think of the Pokeball. Can you please explain it to us? And what I also wanted to talk about is that I think this isn't my favorite show that I've ever seen, I'm really excited for what it will inspire. Like, A, it'll inspire a surreal show that'll do it even better.
Yeah.
Or the places that they're going to take the superhero genre in TV. Because I think right now we're in a golden age of TV. There's so much cool stuff happening. But, like you were saying, the Marvel Netflix and the Marvel ABC and even the DC shows, they kind of just seem to be doing this formulaic thing. Even Jessica Jones, which is pretty good, it still has a very formula to it.
There's a formula to it. But it's between Jessica Jones and Daredevil season two as my favorite of the.
Right. Not that there's anything wrong with the formula. I just think that maybe they have a method. This will open the doors to being able to play with the superhero genre more.
Yeah. Any superhero, weird, surreal superhero shows you guys want to see in the future?
Do you have one?
I would like to see a Moon Knight show.
I don't even know who that is.
He's another kind of mentally ill character in the Marvel universe, and he's pretty interesting, and that could be kind of cool. It'd be pretty dark though.
You know, it could be a cool surreal show.
Huh?
Paper Girls.
Yeah, Paper. Oh my gosh, you want to talk about something that could be a cool show? Or it needs to be an anime, but monstrous.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, we did an episode of Monstrous, and Karen, you're a big fan of Monstrous.
Yes, that was great. I would love to see that in... Yeah, I think I'd want it to be an anime as well.
Yeah, it does so well as a comic that, like, to try and convert that to live action, I think could be a little let down. But do you have any X-Men shows you'd like to see in the future, or superhero shows that could be kind of surrealistic?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I will say, like, anything to do with the more mystical, magical aspects of it, I think could be really cool to see on television. And I think people are interested. Like, we have, obviously, we have, like, the DC universe, which is very much grounded in reality. I think even the Avengers universe in general is very realistic in a lot of ways, but to see a high concept, mystical, magical kind of television show would be really fun.
And I thought that's what they were going to try and do with Iron Fist, but it doesn't seem like they pulled it off.
Please don't let me talk about Iron Fist.
I haven't watched it yet.
I watched the first two episodes and I was like,
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to watch. I want to try and at least get a little further in it.
But. Doctor Strange could have gone that way.
If they did a Doctor Strange show, it could have very much been along the lines of Legion.
Mm-hmm.
But even that was like a surrealistic style applied to the Marvel formula movie. Mm-hmm. But it was different enough that it was pretty cool.
I think Legion does a good job starting us in a surreal world, and I'm very excited to see where other shows take it, superhero or not.
Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And I'm Claire White.
And we are Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, A Nerd Manual. Feel free to contact us on our website at dsrapodcast.com, and we would love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes. You can find the show on Twitter at DSRA Podcast. I can be found on Twitter at Klex303.
I can be found at Along With Claire. That's Claire.
And Karen, where can we find you on social media, and what are you up to in the internet world these days?
You can find me on Twitter at Karen_Rott. So that's Karen_Rought. And I write for Hypable.com, Hypable, and I write about Legion, a lot of other shows, and I actually have 4 other podcasts that I do, so you can find me there as well.
Super busy.
What's your? I really enjoyed your book podcast. It's Book Hype, right?
Yes.
Check it out, Book Hype. And after you're done checking out Book Hype, you can find our producer, James, on Twitter at James Foey Jr. That's James Foey, F-O-U-H-E-Y-J-R. You can learn more about Legion on our Facebook page, where we're going to post some of our show notes. And Karen actually has agreed to send me some articles that she's written. We'll post up there as well for all you out there who are curious. Our producer is James Foey. Our logo was done by Patty Hyland, and our theme was composed by Pete Rowan. And we just want to thank Karen for coming on the show again.
Yay,
thank you so much, Karen.
Thanks for having me. I had so much fun.
Yes, it was a pleasure to have you and talk Legion. It was awesome. Once again, this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures in Nerd Manual. Thanks for listening, and we will see you in a couple weeks.